they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole we found. And I was thinking,
hi, this is Nico. You're listening to My Dad Will Fall, also known as the White Rabbit and James Jardine on the one and only Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Buckle up and enjoy.
Deep into this pool.
Oh man, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are, whatever it is that you are doing. Welcome down to Security Rabbit Hole to an edition of the Down to Security Rabbit Hole podcast that involves adult libations, because Jim and I are going to tackle a subject, maybe a couple subjects. Screw it, we'll see what we can get ourselves into. But Jim, welcome back to the show, my friend. Good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I have to say, I know I say this, have said it before, but I always giggle a little bit when I hear the intro song, because I've been listening to the show for so many years now, and it's just still a thrill to be able to jump on with you. It's great, and this time we get to drink. I mean,
yes. Well, that's look, I've been sitting here, so today and all weekend, I'm kind of flipping through headlines, and we'll talk a couple of them, but. Last week, I made a – we'll start with this. This is a weird time to be in this industry, just a weird time. And nothing illustrates that better for me in the last couple of weeks. And I'm gonna try my hand at screen sharing. You ready, Jim? We tried Send this it. Once already. Let's see if this
it
works.
It worked pretty well. It worked well before.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I give you the headline. Top cybersecurity salaries shoot past – $780,000. Don't walk, rush to your nearest boot camp, give them your money, and you will be a millionaire overnight. And yet, I literally had a lunch with a good buddy of mine today that can't find a job and is looking at potentially having to significantly downscale his salary requirements. I know several other people that are looking for work. And while this kind of nonsensical headline gets everybody frothy and hot and bothered, like the first line of this is the top 10% of cybersecurity professionals in U.S. draw, blah, blah, blah. I stopped paying attention after that, because like, if you guys want to go read this article, check out my – I commented on my LinkedIn because this just drew my ire. To me, it's clickbait of the worst kind. Like, this one trick will make you a millionaire overnight. Stop yep. it.
It's
Stop
so
it.
Stupid.
Stop yeah. it.
My first reaction was, do they mean salary as in, like, what you make over a 10-year period? Is that what salary means now? Because it's not signing me up.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jim, maybe there are just a whole bunch of people making $780,000 a year on average in that top 10%, maybe. And we're just in the wrong jobs, bro. That just might be it.
Hey, well, you know, we did have a little tiny chat before the show where it was like, maybe there's the good, the light side of security, the dark side of security. And some of those guys are making a lot. Some of those, that may be what they responded to.
Either right,
that,
right.
Or somebody typed in 100K and slipped in an extra zero by accident or something.
Right, but exactly.
That number is completely off the rails.
Well, what does it for me is that they're talking about like these massive salaries, and it says the study, which is based on responses from 563 security professionals. Nice sample, by the way, from April 2023 to November 23. So you only got 563 people to respond to you during that time. Yikes. Primarily surveyed security analysts and security managers. By the way, I'm just going to put this out there. If you're an analyst making over $500,000 a year, I want to hear from you right now. Like, stop what you're doing. You can do it anonymously, whatever. Send me a comment. Send me a note. Smoke signal. Carrier pigeon. I don't care. Be like, yeah, I make $500,000 a year as an analyst. I'm guaranteeing myself I'm going to hear from nobody.
No.
Ain't nobody making $500,000 as an analyst. Where?
And we mean USD, by the way. We're not talking
right. US dollars. Yeah. Not like you know.
I'm trying to think, what's a really steep one? I think was it like
rubles, right?
Like rubles. Russian rubles. Okay, that.
That's right.
There you go.
The conversion is like 100 billion to one at this
point. Yeah, yeah, so exactly. Like, exactly. Yeah. There's millionaires walking all over the place.
Well, see, so this is kind of where this whole on-ramp of like what the hell's happening right now is, because you read statistic like that. We all know people in our industry looking for work and struggling. So we have this massive mismatch between what companies are willing to pay for good quality employees versus what the expectations were a year and a half, 2 years ago. And look, the salaries weren't shit either. Like, these were pretty decent. I mean, we were making a good living. This is an industry where you can make a really good living. I'll say that. It may not be a 780 grand, but it's a good living. Like, there's no denying it. We're making good cash. So, but something happened, right? The economy squeezed. We realized we had overstaffed, whatever. And suddenly we have people that are looking for work. Meanwhile, we're still doing these absurd, like, boot camp for cyber, like, take your, you know, whatever. It used to be take your CISP, go, you know, we'll hand you a 250K a year job. Now at least it's you know, less what do you want to call that,
Jim? Obtuse.
Less used cars.
Ridiculous.
than that. I don't know.
Because
you've seen this firsthand.
Yeah, it's because the security industry, which was used to be, let's call it small, and we used to call it just security. Now it's like 70 different things, but it has created these sort of bubbles of economy that have floated around a little bit, right? And these bubbles have created their own universes of companies and selling motions and product and services and things of that nature, right? So what we're seeing is this echo of, no, you got to buy this, because don't believe the naysay. There are more jobs out there. You can make a gazillion dollars. And if you buy this bottle of snake oil to get this special certificate and the one of 450 different certificates you can get. So I think on the very dark side of this, I could say it's like, you know, the gasping breaths of the last gasp of this whole animal. But I don't want to go that far. But I would say is that it got inflated quick, man. I mean,
it did.
It got out of hand quick.
Yeah. It got weird. And look, I'm gonna come back to this article because it's just so bad. The line is, the global cybersecurity talent shortage is a perennial issue. In whatever universe this guy lives in. In the U.S. alone, there are only enough qualified cybersecurity professionals to meet 72% of current demand, which is hovering near a 10-year low. Yes, that's right. Demand is hovering near a 10-year low. There are more people out of work than we've ever been involved with, that we've ever known. And some Gartner guy is going to try to tell me that there's a higher demand than supply. Get out of town. Right now, take the express train, just get out of town. Dude, this is how you destroy your credibility.
So listen, I think, one, we have to walk the fine line of the word credibility in that statement, right?
Seriously.
Okay, so there is a little bit of, and because of the reasons that we've been talking about, and these sort of stacks and spikes of economy or economies or sub-economies, however you want to phrase it, is there's been this massive rush, right? So you have a lot of people who have done the deed and got the certification, bought the thingy, and kind of get in because they want to make good money too, right? And you know what? I'm here to not – I don't blame a single person, right? 100%. I'm down. The thing, however, though, is one is, I think we've sent a really mixed signal to the world as a profession, to people who wanting to get into the profession. And I can talk at great lengths of that. I mean, some of the things I've seen lately is completely crazy. And then I think we've also sent really mixed signals to organizations looking to hire people, because you read some of these job descriptions and they're out to lunch. It's just not, you know, they haven't connected the dots between, yes, I want you to do these 10,000 things with 40 years of experience, and we want you to do it for 75 cents. And
right,
you have to travel 100% of your time. You know, I mean, it's just kind of like, wait, what? Ooh. So I think there is a fundamental breakdown, I think, and I think a lot of things have contributed to it. I think they kind of percolate up into the certification, I hate to say it, what are those places puppy machines,
Cert mills.
Mill, Sir Mills, right? So
yep.
I think there's that. I think there's this perception that security is all about being a hacker. I mean, I can't tell you the number of things that I see. It's like, hey, forget, literally, I saw this recently, forget learning networks, forget learning operating system, all this kind of stuff. You want to achieve the premium echelon of cybersecurity expertise, and that is pen testing. And I'm like, wait a second. Right? You know, that's a one facet of a very dynamic type of profession. You know what I'm saying?
So right.
It's crazy.
It, I mean, look, like I said, it's a weird time to be in this space. And it's not just the labor market that's completely disconnected from realities. Some days our industry kind of feels like the stock market, where you're like, wow, I am having a hard time buying groceries for tomorrow under $100. And then, you know, you flip on TV, and like, the economy is better than it's ever been. You're like, mm-hmm. I don't feel so good about that statement. This is the exact same. It's statistics in different that represent different things that talk about the same thing that are fundamentally disconnected from each other, right? Mm. People talk about, oh, the economy is, which they usually mean the stock market's doing great. And we all know the stock market is not connected to any sort of reality for the average Joe, you and I.
No.
What that means is for security is when you start talking about this massive job shortage, it's, I have a feeling it's employers answering these surveys saying, oh, Jim, I can't find enough people. You're like, okay, well, what does that mean? Well, I've got 12 analyst jobs that require 5 years of experience and 27 different technical domains of expertise for $75K. I think I'm paying great. The study says they should all be making $787,000 a year, but I can't find them. You're like,
I don't understand what
I don't know
you're
what you're
for.
Smoking, but keep it over in California. All right.
Do you think, let me ask you, this is a bit of a pointed question. I'm probably going to insult a huge swath of people.
That's okay. That's what this one might have. This episode might just do that.
This is so. Why I'm, this is why this bottle's empty now.
I was going to say, I should have put like a trigger warning on this. Like, if you're easily offended, do not listen to this episode.
Yeah, exactly. The subtitle, run. So I think, listen, there is, and this is a bit of a tricky one for me. And as soon as I say it, it'll click, is I think that the employer to job hunter relationship has gotten so diverged, so much so that an entire industry has like swelled in that valley, and that's the recruiting industry. Now, I am not saying there are not amazing recruiters out there, amazing talent people out there that know how to connect the needs of an organization to the wants and desires of a professional. I'm not saying that doesn't exist. What I'm saying does exist is that is a huge market. There are massive companies buying and selling and consuming each other and applications that are coming out every day to take your resume, gobbled up in an AI thing and spit out some ChatGPT version of who you are. So much to the point that people write resumes in LinkedIn's just to feed the AI. It's not even for humans anymore. So when you're an employer trying to find somebody, how do you translate through this massive echo chamber of weirdness of translations to get to the person you're really looking for when that person is just trying to adjust who they are in hopes that they'll even get an interview?
Well, yeah, right. You got to get through 27 algorithms that are all looking for specific keywords. Listen,
they don't understand that they don't understand. They don't know
that they don't
the meaning behind the keywords.
There are there's a couple of really good ones, and you and I actually worked with some good people back in the day when we worked together the first time. It's funny because I ran into him at this job I have now. He's gone now, but it's a guy named Pat Riley. Pat, if you're listening, what's up, dude? Haven't talked to you in a while. But Pat was a recruiter at HP. Mm-hmm. Pat was a recruiter at ExtraHop for a minute before I got there, and like. Pat could look at your resume and be like, all right, yeah, you're not right for this. You're like, but I've used all the keywords. Like, yeah, you're not right for this. I see what you're doing. But I mean, I've been lucky where I haven't had to like seriously job hunt, like need to job hunt in a long time. So I'm blessed in that regard. But we've all been at that spot where you're like, is there more out there? Like, I'm kind of either bored or feeling undervalued or whatever. Mm. And I'm going to make a statement that I think will probably resonate with some people. Like, if you're feeling undervalued at the company you work for now, go apply to a few places right now and immediately feel better.
Yes.
Right. About your current job.
Absolutely.
Because if you think you're undervalued at your current organization, unless you are absolutely like making crap wage, if you're making a decent salary, like be honest with yourself, are you making a reasonable salary? If you are, but you want more, I recommend put your name out there for a couple of recruiters, have people call you up and be like, hey, I have this help desk job that you'd be perfect for with your 17 years of experience. And like, you can get $18 an hour. Like what? And my LinkedIn, I mean, is active. I'm pretty active. I haven't optimized it for whatever recruiting services, AI stuff things. But I get like the nuttiest, like, oh, we have the senior architect. I got one the other day. I'm not going to call out who it is. It's a well-known company. I got an email from a human being. I verified. I wrote the person back. It was like, our system pulled your name and I verified your data. And I think you'd be perfect for this job that we're looking for. It's a 6-month contract for, I think it was a SIM senior architect position. I'm reading going, this has to be automated. Like there's no way a person wrote this. So I literally replied back and I said, okay, tell me how you got to writing me this email. And I expected some garbage. And the person called me and I'm like, wow. Oh my God, you're real. And you ever have one of those moments where you like, oh, this is so dumb. I can't wait for the response. And the response is a person. And you're like, oh,
whoops.
Wow. I can't say what I was thinking.
No.
You're like, and my first words were, wow, I didn't think this came from a person. He goes, why not? I said, because this is so surreal. I'm nearing a quarter, I'm coming up on 25 actual years of solidly in this industry. I've done jobs that this one would be like reporting to 3 levels up.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, this salary is what I look for in a bonus. Thanks for playing. Like, how did you get here? Guy's like, man, I'm having such a hard time finding talent. I'm like, how? I've got 3 friends that I can point to you right now that are looking for work. 2 of them would be great for this job. Now you have to like add 75 grand to salary. He's like, well, that's the problem. You know, they're not, this is what they're willing to pay. I'm like, good luck. Have fun.
It's weird. It's like trying to catch fish with a net as the hole's too big kind of thing. Things are going right through. You're not setting yourself up for success for finding people because you don't know what you're one. I don't think people really understand what they're looking for. And 2, they don't know how to express it in a meaningful way that represents what's out there. And 2, they're not willing to really understand what's being the pay is other than what they're picking up on Glassdoor or something like that. So, you know, anyway, the simple fact of the matter is I believe there's a massive disconnect, 100%. And I think being a security professional to finding a job is extremely difficult because look at all the different certifications. I mean, you can specialize in the smallest of things now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not to play the I walked up to school in snow uphill both ways, I'm 80 years old bullshit. But back in the day, you had to kind of know it all to be considered a security person, right? And now you can be exceedingly successful and know a slice of it. You can be like just this kind of pen tester or a threat hunter of this type. You know what I mean? And I huge respect for that, man. I mean, when people really know how to do something that good, like when you see somebody, I mean, make it in any line of work, when somebody makes an amazing piece of furniture or, you know, does something that you just go, wow,
right?
Like a real craftsman, you go, holy crap. I respect that because you know how much work it took to do that. But I'm thinking, okay, you make rocking chairs with 7 legs. That's a pretty, you know, unique market. You're really good at that. Like maybe threat hunting or pick whatever. I'm thinking, you know, how much space can the market take for that specialization? So I definitely think that we're sending huge mixed signals in some cases when it comes to
that. So this is where I think is interesting is this in like the longer we've been, like, and look, when same with me, right? My first couple of security jobs were like, I was a security person. Firewalls, yes. Patching, yes. Vulnerabilities, scanning, yes.
Sweeping the floor?
Work, yes. Like, by the way, answered help desk calls, yes. Right? Router ACLs, yes. Fixing weird switch problems, also yes.
Yep.
Like, hey, I need to install a server. I'm your guy, right? Okay. All of those things. And over time, you're right, those things have specialized. We've become, you know, we always had to be. There wasn't a mile deep. It was all a mile wide.
Yep.
And the pool was shallow. Over time, it's gotten deeper. And now, this is sort of the challenge, right? Like, this is it's like, sir, I have a friend hold on, I'm going to get this right. He is a pediatric oncology something surgeon. So he's a specialist in childhood cancer patients of the brain in certain circumstances. Like, how many of these people do you need? And the answer is very few.
Yeah.
But he makes a literal crap ton of money. Now, he doesn't ever sleep because he's always on call, but he makes a truck ton of cash. This is what security's done. We have specialized and verticalized. And the problem is, and I'm a victim of this too, right? So as you and I have kind of gone up the stack, right? I led consulting teams. I led executive advisory teams. I was in the consulting function. And then I ended up I built a pre-sales team, and I built a services organization, and I built a managed services organization. And now I'm rebuilding go-to-market functions and services and various other kind of components of the company. And now people are like, hey, yeah, but what I really need is a person that understands this adjacent thing. I'm like, I could do that. Like, yeah, but last 5 years, you've been a services, rebuild guy. What I really need is a product understanding of services guy. And I'm like, wait a minute.
You just said my number one pet peeve, man. My number one pet peeve is exactly that. It's like, I know how to race this car, this motorcycle, and this bicycle, right? Yeah, but I need somebody who really knows how to race wheelchairs or something, right? You're like, but or they go back to race cars. Like, yeah, but you did that 10 years ago. We have a different race car now. And you're like, okay, wait a second. Time out. I'll also want to add is there is a sense of hyper compartmentalization by leadership, I think. Let me walk you through this one. Have you ever had a leader that you worked for and then stopped working for and gone back to a few years later and go, oh, how you're doing? And they're like, and maybe many years have passed and they go, man, you were the greatest X of all time. And they just think that that's all you know how to do is X. They call you when they need X. They think of you about X. And you're like, dude, X was like a long time ago.
Right.
I've done so much more than X since then, right? You know, I went from managing 3 people to 1,000.
Yeah.
I think I can, give me a little bit of something. That was 25 years ago. That was 15 years ago, whatever. And so I think also that tells me that people get certain locked in their perspective. And that happens when they look at CVs. That happens when that first 2 seconds you're talking to somebody and you go, they say, hey, tell me about yourself. And you go, oh, well, I got into security doing this and da 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 da. You start talking and they're like, oh, well, that's not really what I needed. And I'm like, so you want me to take 30 years of a career and stuff it in 5-minute conversation?
So I think what we're both trying to say is, and it just kind of gelled in my head as you were talking, you and I learned the concept of things, right? And people of our generation, that's OGs, right? We learned the concept of things. We learned what a SIM was. Could we apply that to any of them on the market? Yes. Were we experts like down to the configuration of anyone? Hell no.
Nope.
Right? Did I know how firewalls work? Yes. Could you put me on a Cisco PIX, a Checkpoint, a Palo, an IBM Fion, or like 7 other ones?
Yeah.
I could figure it out.
100%.
Was I expert level at any of them? No, but I knew like where to go to like ask those questions and how to like get that answer. What we're asking today, and I still see this on job description, is looking for an expert in Microsoft Sentinel with CrowdStrike XDR and Palo Alto next-gen firewalls. You're like,
yes.
So I've done SIM, I've done endpoint, and I've done firewalls. I'm good. They're like, no, no, no. We need those keywords. Like, okay, but they're really not that different conceptually, and I can learn things, as I've shown you in my resume, yep, because I've done like 27 different things. Like, no, but I need that thing. Like, but what happens when the company decides that that sim is too expensive, they're going to migrate to this other thing? Are you firing all of us and hiring new people that know that only?
That's a great
and
point.
Freaking fortunately, sometimes the answer is yeah.
Holy
yes, God. Which is just.
So I'm going to say something that sounds wicked egotistical, but it ties directly into what you're saying. Okay. And it's actually based on a article I wrote like in 2004 or something ridiculous. You take time to learn skills. So you go through a learning process to develop skills. Okay. Over time and through the application of skill, you develop knowledge, right? So knowledge is an expansion of skill into a certain area, okay? As you expand skills over time and therefore expand your knowledge, you're broadening from routing into firewalls, you're routing into firewalls to standards and risk and compliance, who knows, whatever it is, but you're expanding your knowledge base. As you continue to expand the knowledge base, which is implied creating more skill, you then start to go into the element, what I call the wisdom layer, right? So you do enough skill across enough different areas over enough time, you build knowledge in these big giant buckets. And as you build more and more knowledge, you start to build a degree of wisdom. And I think it's very self-serving to say this crap out loud, right? This is why I only do it after I've had several drinks. And the point is that I think this is the one, I think every industry is like this. It's not unique to security, but if you have enough bruises and beatdowns and losses and failures and you've stumbled across enough landmines and enough, oh my God, I blew up that server because I ripped out a RAID driver. You know, you do enough silliness. You've been hacked enough. Yeah, right. Exactly. Hey, it's RAID. I can pull this hard drive out. No problem. The point being is what you're saying is, yes, I don't know specifically how to do the latest version of Checkpoint, okay? But I've done so many firewalls and so many things like Checkpoint that the philosophy, the intent, the objective, the insert word here is enough to where I can draw from my past and my ability to think critically so I can go and go do good research and connect the history and experience with the newest and greatest and find those points where, okay, I kind of get what is happening right here. I understand that they've changed what they call this and I can translate that in my head. I get it now. I know that any rule is going to be bad. So the thing is that I think there's more to this than meets the eye. I do think that we talk about, I got a lot of experience and people translate that. You've worked on 17 different boxes or 170 when in fact, we don't even think of it in terms of boxes anymore. We think in terms of the conceptual, because I think to your point, that's where we started. So anyway,
I babbled. Look, there's a, it feels like there's a penalty, a career penalty you pay for wanting to diversify what you're learning, right? At some point you get locked in. If you saw, I at one point I had to choose, am I going to go back to the enterprise or I'm going to stay as a consultant on the vendor side? And I picked the vendor side. No regrets. And so I'm down this path, right? And should I've got the equivalent industry experience on what I'm doing, but the making the switch back is almost now impossible without taking a crazy pay cut. The one I saw recently baffled me. There was a posting for somebody with, we'll say, very specific New York related financial regulatory expertise, and my first thought was those people were minted like 10 minutes ago. Okay, if you're asking for multiple years of experience with that, I know you have no idea what you're asking. So a friend and a colleague applied. Good friend looking for work. Very smart. She knows what she's talking about, but lived in healthcare most of her life. Instant rejection. We're sorry, but you don't have the requisite skills. And she's like, I've done compliance for half my 15-year career. compliance really is just like the regs are worded differently. They want different things, but literally the mechanisms are the same. It's like gun safety, like trigger safety, right? Trigger discipline on an AR versus a 9mm versus a bazooka. You don't put your finger on the trigger if you're not intending to pull it, right? Like this is not different from gun to gun.
Exactly. Can
I drive buzzed in a Ferrari versus a Yugo? No, you still shouldn't do that in any car. Like it's not rocket surgery. And it baffles me. I read that and I'm like, I know some of the people in that company. So I asked, and the reply I got back was, yeah, we use an outsourced HR group and they are very firm on their requirements. Like, how long has this rec been open? They're like, yeah, it's been like 9 months. We've rejected literally everybody that's applied. And my first thought, like I wanted to be a complete smart ass and reply back and say, those people that you're looking for don't actually exist. But I'm just going to check in another 6 months and be like, hey, did you find your magical person that doesn't exist yet? Like by now they may exist because maybe we are at that point where that regulation's been out long enough to match the experience level you're asking for. But holy cow. But it's not like the madness is not just in the labor force, Jim. And I'm seeing this now as a vendor on the vendor side where because we are coming up imminently – 2 months, 60 days away from the next RSA conference, and you know the next vendor goat rodeo, as I'm sure Hoff would say. And it's interesting because there are going to be more vendors than there were last year. Some of them have been consolidated, and new ones popped up in their place.
Of course,
right? And it's weird because the last conversation, I think podcast episode ago, we were talking about with Grossman about, two episodes ago, maybe, we were talking with Grossman about, you know, hey, is it going to be a thing? Like, are we ever going to hold companies that develop software and widgets liable for the problems they create?
And that podcast was,
I wanted to make a series. I think I'm going to do the series out of that one.
I know this isn't for the show, but if you can remind your audience right now what episode that was, everybody needs to listen to it because I feel like it broke the membrane on the topic.
Really, well, honestly. So that episode, 588.
588.
This is how we get to software liability. And Jeremiah is right.
Jeremiah was right dead
when
spot
he did
on.
It at White Hat. He was 100%. Right when he did it.
The guy's a rock star. Right,
Sentinel One. And the problem was, and I thought about this because it bothers me, Jim, that like nobody followed him. Like I thought the entire industry was going to go, well, hell, that worked. We should try it. Nobody followed suit.
Because there's no upside. Nobody wins because you're the customer wins. No, nobody wants the customer to win. You don't make money absorbing liability for your stuff.
That's right.
If I can sell you something and it's like, hey, this car comes with no warranty. Great. And I'm super successful and a godzillionaire making money all over the place. And all of a sudden you go, I want a warranty. Go pound sand.
Right. Know? Why would you do it?
I know, but that whole podcast was game changing for me because I think in some ways, I haven't said anything, but I think it all the time. I really struggle with the sort of the liability of insecurity or cybersecurity. It's just, it just falls all on the victim. It falls all on the
100%.
Victim. 100%. Nobody is there with
you. There's no recourse. Because you click that, I absolve the vendor of anything that it will happen after I click this button. But you have no choice. You're buying, like if you're a large enterprise, you can say, you know what? You're absorbing liability to some extent. But like, guys, you know, as you listen, right? Anybody who listens to this show, to any show, anybody that's out there, it's installed software. You click the I agree button because you don't bother scrolling down because you know there could be some seriously objectionable crap in there. You're like, oh my God. Yeah, you know what? There are no alternatives. What am I going to do? Go to Apple and go, no, I refuse to let you data share and track me all the time. Google, I am not going to allow. Yeah, you are. Yes, you are. 100%. You have no choice.
We can do write your own stuff. I mean, and you know, without using
I'll
them.
I'll get right on that.
So I'll get right on that. This conversation can mushroom, but I think the history, this is the one thing I think that wasn't covered on there. The only reason I'm bringing it up is because the history says, well, you buy the software, you can use it any way you want. We don't have any responsibility for how you might have put it in and blah, blah, blah. But now that we've predominantly shifted over to a cloud environment,
right?
We're buying a service. Now it's like, well, wait a second. It's up to you to make sure that infrastructure is now secure. You're the one implementing it. Guess what? There's still a click through that says go pound sand.
Nothing's changed.
Nothing has changed, right?
Right. Nothing has changed. And this is evident, right? Because AT&T went down for a full day. A full day, I think, that people could not get on their cell phones. They couldn't text in some parts of the country. Couldn't make phone calls. Listen, folks, I got off. I refuse to give them any. Like, I got off. I changed carriers a long time ago. But, okay, they said, oh, we will offer you recourse. Here's $5. Are you kidding me?
I got a text message from them. I got a text message. Sorry that happened.
Sorry, we screwed up. But hey, we broke some stuff. Yeah. I hope you weren't depending on this phone call from, like, you know, your pregnant wife to meet her at the hospital. Maybe hopefully nothing serious happened. Nobody at work called you or
nothing ever happens serious in the hospital. No.
Yeah. Mm-mm. No. Hopefully nothing serious happened. But if you did, you know, but hey, here's $5. That's like insult to injury. But at least it's $5. When my operating system goes kablooey, I lose everything. They're like,
yeah.
What do you want from us? You click the button. You said, yeah, I agree. Go away.
What are you calling me for?
Right. What? Go away.
Sorry. Yeah.
By the way, you owe me money for support. What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. $300 per hour for this call.
Right. It's after hours. Are you serious right now? Man, this is a weird time to be in cyber, because I feel like the vendors, I've said this probably for a decade, but the vendor thing has definitely mushroomed and grown out of control. But like, the industry right now, right at this moment, is I would best liken it to a late summer forest about after a nice soaking rain at about 4 a.m. where you look around and suddenly boom, there's a billion mushrooms around you. You don't know which ones are deadly, which ones are good, but you're starving and you have to eat.
Oh my God.
How's that for an analogy?
That's pretty intense, because for a moment there, I was like, actually, you know, I'm sensing the fog lifting, the morning fog. It's going to be pretty and sunrise. And all of a sudden you got poison mushrooms coming.
Right. And you're like, hey, this is tasty. This is tasty. This is going great. And you're dead.
And you're dead.
Data breach. Sorry. Sucks to be you.
It sucks to be you.
and I think that the last part of this that I'm going to cover, cause that makes this kind of the trifecta, right? Because labor market's bonkers. It's upside down and we're lying. I think we're flat out just lying to people. If it's not outright lying, then it's terrible propaganda and we should curb this nonsense. The one time I'm going to say fake news, legitimately. And we've got vendors popping up, not having any liability, going away, consolidating, PE firms crushing together, multiple vendors, some of them VMware getting passed around from one vendor to one vendor, like the worst ever, you know, I don't know, something. And the trifecta on this, and I think that, you know, the thing that really, really makes this, I think, very real for me is the fact that where we are today, we are still blaming victims. Mm. And making it more difficult on victims of ransomware, of exploitation, of hacking, nation state, 15-year-old in a basement, whatever. And by the way, this ties in like first party risk, because somebody forgot to, you know, some intern whose job it was to patch one server was gone for the day that patch came out. They missed it. Now your entire company is hacked. Yes, because of that patch, but also because you have a flat network. You know, never mind that. And it's easy to blame. And but also, like, we just it's so broken. It's so fundamentally broken that we've made it a sport. It's practically an Olympic sport to go out and name and shame and hit up companies on their worst day. Now, to some extent, it's getting better. because at least the people that would show up, Jim, you know who I'm talking about, right around the time we worked together, right? Because my comment was constantly, no, I'm not going to comment on this news story because I don't know anything. And guessing is irresponsible, but guess what? You know, that reporter could call 17 other people from other vendors and they would be happy to give you a quote that said, well, if they've only used my product, they would be fine, right? Now. You're like, are you kidding me? But it's such a weird time and place to be here that I don't like it. To some extent, I see this as we're just maturing, right? Like we are getting to some critical mass where the star is getting big enough and eventually it's just going to boom, boom, and there'll be nothing left.
You think it's going to go supernova? Is that what you're saying?
I think the way it goes supernova is how do I say this without getting myself an expletive rating, explicit rating? I think things get so bad because they are already that we keep piling regulation and requirements on top of regulation and requirements, and budgets just start to implode. Like people just say, you know what? I can't. This is as far as I'm. I think we're there already. This is as far as I'm willing to go.
I think we're past it.
So we're either there or past it. Companies are like, I'm done. If you're going to tell me your widget is something I have to have, tell me one thing I have to let go, or that you're replacing. I'm not buying additional widgets. Yep. And now, you know, third-party risk is everybody's number one nightmare because your house could be spick and span, no vulns, AppSec program is perfect, identity and access management is on point, every firewall, every external configuration, fully zero trust, and the vendor that processes your payment terminals, firmware, that's seven people in a garage because they're the cheapest, and you know that's who they're going to buy from, has a major issue, and suddenly China owns your entire infrastructure. You're like, how could this have happened?
Yep. Heads roll, budgets get slashed, and what do we do
wrong? And that starts the down – because we've been in that – we've been – what is it? Atlas pushing the boulder up the hill for a very long time.
Sisyphus.
Not an Atlas is holding up the world. Sisyphus is pushing the boulder up the hill.
Yep.
I think Sisyphus is getting damn good and tired. And at some point, his foot's going to slip and it's just going to crush and it's going to roll downhill. I think this industry unwinds in a very bad way.
So as we all know, you know, at least what physics will tell you is that, you know, novas get really big and either they cram down into like a white drawer for a magnetron or a neutron, or they go into a black hole and you get the big reverse, the big suck, right?
Yeah.
I think you're dead spot on. I do think we've reached, using a different analogy, the event horizon of this animal. I think Sisyphus's foot has slipped and the ball is now rolling downhill uncontrollably, and we're still sitting in front of it thinking we're going to stop this freaking thing, right? But it's just a matter of time before we step on another rock, and it's the last give. And the thing is it's almost like a forest fire. If you stop within reason, I don't want to like, you know, get into crazies, but if a forest burns down, it kind of needs to do that on a kind of regular basis. There's a cycle to it. And if you keep sort of padding it, you're just going to create a really bad firestorm.
Eventually that lasts for months. Eventually wipes the ecosystem out. Yes.
100%.
Right. Controlled burns are required.
And then it takes like a generation for trees to start finding their way coming out again. And then we start from scratch. There's a rebirth, for lack of a better term. But I feel like we have done what many industries have died from. Some have been okay after the fact, but you see something shiny and there's a lot of money there and you dig into that ground. You mine that as hard as you can and new tools show up, new equipment shows up. You're just throwing things to the side to get to that money. And there's just seems like a never ending vault of gold and whatever you want to call it down there. And then next thing you know, people are eating each other and it's really bad. And the thing is, it's gotten so bad, and I know we're getting over on time here, but so bad that I've sitting there and saying, look, you came to me, we got together because you know I'm a subject matter expert in this area. I've been doing it for 30 years. I got a few things I can add to the conversation.
You know, right? Some things.
I had a thing once. And people like will get in arguments with me, and I'm like, wait a second, hold on. You know, I respect what you do for a living. And I'm a specialist in my area, and there are times when having a specialist is required, you know, like a doctor, mechanic, welder, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm your welder, right? Help me. I will walk you through how to make this stuff work together. And it's like, I don't think so. You know, I'm like, well, you're not a welder. That's why he called me, right? You know, or a plumber or whatever, insert whatever thing. And I just find it fascinating that we've created this mountain of goo, and I think we're having to pay the price for it a little bit. I really do.
So,
oh man, what a bummer.
I mean, it's kind of a strange place to really take this, but Tom Nichols, I had on many episodes ago, a couple of years ago. If you have not read, folks, Tom Nichols' book, Death of Expertise, I don't remember what podcast episode it was in. Scroll back far enough, you'll find it. But Tom's a political analyst. Tom's one of the smartest guys I think I've ever met. He tells a story of, like, he was an actual Russia expert in the, like, during the Cold War. Like, he studied Russian affairs, language, culture. He was in Moscow, like, during Cold War time. Like, he was there.
Wow.
And he's like, I had a conversation with somebody where they started telling him, he's like, no, I wrote the book on, like, post-Cold War Russia. And he's like, yeah, I know, but listen, I heard. And he's like, I'm done. I'm like, I'm out. Like, oh my God, are you seriously doing this? But I think you're right. So I don't know that the industry necessarily, we're not going to hit black hole, because I think what's going to happen is it will find, this thing finds a way. You know why it's going to find its way? And this is probably going to come back to me at some point, but I blame the VC and the private equity world, because you keep propping up companies that should not exist. These two, four, eight, $10 billion unicorns that magically run out of cash because cost of borrowing gets more expensive, and like, what? I'm burning $7 million a day on whatever salaries. You're like, what? You haven't made a penny yet, but someday I will. Right. And you're like, you've gone 20 years and you've not made a profit yet. Huh? What? How? Like, I'm not a finance guy, but like, that to me seems like black magic nonsense. And this industry is filled east to west, north to south, top to bottom, left to right, of companies that should not exist. Yes. Did they do something innovative for 15 minutes? Yes. Should that have been a feature in a bigger product? Also, yes. Will they continue to be propped up until they completely lose, run out of cash, or somebody mismanages them badly enough? Probably. But that's like the cherry on top of this entire conversation, is I think it is such a weird time, because it's really hard to fail as a security company. It just is, right? It was almost impossible to fail as a security company 10 years ago. It was hard 5 years ago. It's not trivial today. But it is going to get easier and easier to fail as market economics come to reality. I think we're going to start solving this or attempting to solve the security problem by government regulation. And that's just dumb. I'm sorry. That's just dumb. That's not going to happen. Congress has never done they've never figured out how to do anything right at that level, particularly with an industry that moves this fast. I promise you, you're not going to solve it through acts of Congress. Now, or regulations, right? So what's the answer? This industry has to be like the MPAA. God help me, I just said that out loud. And we have to figure out a way to self-regulate. The problem is there's no incentive at the moment for anybody to do the right thing. The incentive is to keep selling things and hope that by the time people realize it, you're off on your private.
Yeah, you've made your nut. You're on your boat. Right.
You've sold your company and nobody cares.
Yes. 100%.
Right. And so there are those of us, you included, I'd like to think I'm part of that crusade, that are actually working in places that are trying to do the good, that are trying to, actually, if you're talking to me, you can probably have a good sense that I do work at an organization. If I'm trying to tell you something that you should probably have, this means that you probably can consolidate a couple of pieces of tech, or this is a iterative or generational version up from what the thing you've got now. So maybe you don't need to keep stacking your security tool set and making the seven people you have learn all 726 of your security tools. But that's for another time. And on that note.
Yeah, I think Yeah. Yeah.
Rant over.
That's a tough one to follow. I will say this is I don't disagree with anything you said. And I would only add that what I think is going to happen in the very near future, and I was just talking about this, going back to this sort of liability, warranty, who's really responsible thing, something's going to happen, and it's going to affect a lot of companies, and included in that spectrum is going to be something related to public safety or something that impacts the economy. Because remember when the ransomware hit Colonial and it like everybody threw hissy fit? Okay. One, that was a drive-by, yada, yada, yada. But the point is the government reacted, the FBI reacted, and you know all those kind of things happen. Now, imagine something that has that sort of attention of the White House and other governments, but is massively across multiple industries. Let's say a massive cloud vulnerability manifests.
So like SolarWinds, but like for the payment system, for the country's payment platforms.
Or insert word of world's largest cloud provider or this world. Insert those big letters and I'm not wishing this, but I'm saying is if it were to happen, that would trigger I think we're at a tipping point where it would trigger enough momentum where the whole world would go, wait a second. I don't think these guys have all our stuff and they made a mistake, right? And then it creates a shift. And I think that shift would be, okay, well, wait a second. Maybe we need to regulate that. Maybe they need to be held more accountable in situations where it was clearly their fault, but these 5,000 companies were fined billions of dollars because of all the regulation we put in. But in fact, those guys are being victimized, right? Yeah. So we finally recognize this and say, oh, and I think at that point, that collapse of that nebula slows down and doesn't turn into a vortex. And because all of a sudden it's like now people have to build better software. Now that liability, that risk is then echoed across the entire universe. Cause right now it's only focused on tiny little planets.
So what you're saying is we get software liability by executive order because we're going to have a massive collapse somewhere, either tragic loss of human life at scale.
I don't want to see
kind
that,
of obviously. Yeah, I don't want to get like that's not a place I want to be. Massive financial disruption, some sort of catastrophic failure across multiple things. Like for example, I can see. Let's not speculate, but you know, there's enough ways where this could go badly in a hurry.
Take the AT&T thing. What if every single cell phone went down and it just so happened, I'm just making this up, that they were all using the same provider and there was a weakness in that infrastructure, that sub infrastructure that brought down a larger infrastructure.
Yeah.
Okay. Now the fact that we're packing so much on that mule the probability of that being a reality is increasing. And when that happens, I think society in general will be like, stop. And then that will force governments to step in and like ask the big question, and that will create an avalanche of activity.
That brings me to the closing thought, but that brings me to that comic when Log4j came out. There was this like, I think it was XKCD or somebody did a comic like the world's software infrastructure, and it's like held up by a piece of software that one guy maintains in his spare time for no money.
So true,
right? True. With the amount of open source that's in every commercial piece of software, that is
100%, right? Oh, that's exactly what's happening, right?
All right, Jim, we're gonna continue this. I think we make this. I don't know. Hey, if you guys are listening and you actually enjoyed this semi rant, this has been very cathartic and therapeutic for Jim and I. If you've enjoyed this, fancy leaving us a comment on either LinkedIn. Go check us out on LinkedIn, on our LinkedIn page, the Dom Security Rabbit Hole Podcast LinkedIn page. Or perhaps, send me I think I'm still on Twitter. Sorry, X, whatever. Send me a message there or whatever. Give me some thoughts because we've covered a lot of ground. Some of it's been sort of depressing, but I think, unfortunately, it's depressing because it's kind of realistic. It's kind of real. Right? I'm not a realist or I'm not a pessimist or an optimist. I'm just kind of the guy that sees things for what they are. And that sort of these days is classified as a pessimist because things aren't great. So All right, Jim, it's been awesome having you on board and having a drink with you and doing this. This is like therapy.
Empty.
Yeah, getting there. This is like therapy, and I think I'm very seriously considering doing like a monthly show, not one of our regular scheduled, but just like a regular third Thursday of the month, something like that kind of thing, where, you know, I leave it open because we can have up to six people on this platform. Leave it open. Like, if you want to jump on and vent for a minute, like, we just some therapy, some group therapy might be fun. All right. That's it. Next one coming up at you. Folks, thanks for listening. It is March 5th as you're listening to this. At least that's when this came out. I don't know when you're listening to this. Maybe it's post-apocalypse and you're listening to this for the 27th time because everything else is gone and we only remain. This is what goes through my head, Jim. This is why
terrible.
I should never.
That's terrible.
I should just be told just end the show. End the show. All right. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. We will catch you guys another time, another place, on a maybe slightly less ranty version of the Down to Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Cheers, y'all. Cue the music. We're gone.
This is Bella. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to leave my dad a review and share this with your friends. Bye.